onde você pega? Okay. And when the light is turned off, suddenly you're in total darkness. Well, now, what happens if you have to get up in the middle of the night? Would you be able to see anything? Then you quickly get out of bed, having got into bed. Don't open the curtain a little bit to let a little bit of light in. And make sure you've got your mobile beside you so that you can turn the torch on. And then you get back into bed, assured that if you do have to get up in the middle of night, you know where you are and you'll be able to see where you go. And this should lead to a good night's sleep. I am assuming that the bed is an extremely comfortable bed. We all need to feel that we know where we are. We all want to be able to see where we are. And as I build on this year's text, fix your eyes on Jesus. Looking unto Jesus just depends which version you know or grew up with. It seems so appropriate that this month we were actual fact raising funds for Sight Savers. It all seemed to come together as us needing to look at eyes and looking. And throughout the Bible, there are references to eyes and to seeing. Right at the beginning of the story in the Bible, what happens in the Garden of Eden? Well, Adam and Eve eat the apple from the tree of knowledge and their eyes are opened and they see themselves in a new way. And of course, that's the indication of the fall as soon as they are conscious of that. So they saw themselves with greater understanding. And look at the situation with Elisha and the host of angels in their chariots around him. It looked so disastrous when it looked as if the town was going to be overtaken by King Aram's hosts and vast army. His servant was so scared. And Elisha prays, open his eyes. And there you get that lovely picture of the hillsides that surround them, full of that heavenly army. A greater understanding, a greater confidence that things would be well. But of course Elisha prays that the opposing army all go blind. Who would want to pray that people went blind? But of course, within this story, he was then able to lead the soldiers and the army away into Samaria. Wisdom prevailed. And when their eyes were opened again and they found themselves in Samaria, the king of Israel was able to be sensible and wise. He fed them and sent them on their way, thus providing a significant period of time of peace within that community around what we would call the Holy Land. A fascinating story from the Old Testament. But Jesus also talks to us about eyes. And we have heard it from the psalmist. We heard in Psalm 119 that great outpouring of praise. It picked up on the hymn, our lips might tell, our eyes might see, as we praise God. And then Jesus teaches about eyes being the ways into both heart and mind. It's interesting, isn't it? Matthew gathered together a lot of Jesus' teachings and put them into that section that we call the Sermon on the Mount. And in verse 22 of chapter 6, we read, the eye is the lamp to the body. If your eyes are healthy, your whole body is full of light. But if your eyes are unhealthy, your whole body will be full of darkness. If then the light within you is darkness, how great is that darkness? I'm not going to ask you to put your hands up, but a lot of you have had your cataracts done. And on Friday, I was talking to a lady who was telling me how wonderful the new system in Shrewsbury is for getting your cataracts done. She said they got it down to a fine art. They do 22 a day and you go through the system. And if you're in the morning, you're ready to go home at lunchtime. She said, it is absolutely incredible. And I said, how do you know about it? Oh, she said, I had my cataract done. And how wonderful everything is now. If your eye is healthy, you can see well, you can rejoice, and everything looks good. And Paul, when he was writing to the Christians and writing this text that we have from Hebrews, it could have easily been written by Paul, using that concept that was familiar to people, people could understand about concentrating your eyes and looking on something. The traveler will concentrate their eyes, particularly in the first century AD, on where they were going so that they didn't get diverted to left or right. They were aware of what was around them, but they didn't need to be diverted. And it's absolutely interesting how lives can sometimes mesh together because people are not diverted. And the hymn which we were singing just before communion is an example of how three lives became meshed together because each individual had fixed their eyes on Jesus. They were looking at where Jesus wanted them to go. In the mid-1800s, a young artist was brought to John Ruskin's attention. And John Ruskin was willing not only to teach her, but to bring her to the attention of the Victorian art world. She had a great gift for perception and interpretation and was able to paint a landscape on paper that made it look as if it was a living, alive environment. And it was considered that she could have become one of that era's renowned artists. But Lilias Trotter felt the call to reach out to those who did not know the Lord. And she knew she could not escape God's undeniable calling. She, with two other friends, went to Algeria as the Algerian Mission Band. Now, this is late 1800s, she went out. It's a good while ago. The best of this little band of committed Christian ladies was they didn't know any of the languages in Algeria. They had no knowledge of the customs. But she stayed and worked there until her death in 1928. She wrote and painted about the life of Algeria and produced a number of books. Some were published back here in the UK and others were used by local Christian converts. Her ability to draw and paint became an integral part in the communications of the gospel, illustrating tracts and booklets specifically designed to reach the Arab through the Arab culture. Her incredible ability to learn languages, she went without knowing anything, but she learned very rapidly, to break down cultural barriers, to organize and write and travel, put her in what could be considered a unique group of Christian women. But I mentioned people like Amy Carmichael and Gladys Aylward. Lilius's book, Focused, had been published in the UK some years early, and an extract from this booklet was to inspire our next hymn. But it took a journey for that hymn to inspire, because in 1950, another couple, Peter and Eva Longley, arrived in Algeria, once again supported by the Algerian Mission Band. And there they met many middle-aged ladies who remembered Lilius Trotter when they had been girls. They found themselves, this couple, living very close to the house where Lilius Trotter had lived. And through visits and exploration, they found her little prayer room. And it proved to be an amazing library of manuscripts of Lilius's work. Fortunately for everybody, the Longleys were able to save much of Lilius's work from destruction during the tumult of the Algerian War. And this means that there is now a reasonable archive of her work. This couple followed Jesus' call. They focused on what Jesus wanted them to do. And they never, ever expected to become archivists. But they were the right people in the right place at the right time for God's work. The lines from the booklet Focus that gave an inspiration are, turn full your soul's vision to Jesus and look at him. A strange dimness will come over all that is apart from him and from the divine by which God's saints are made. Even in this 20th century, it will lay hold for you, for he is worthy to have all there is to be had in the heart for which he died to win. What wonderful words. And it was these words from Lilius's book that inspired a musician, singer, and hymn writer, one Helen Howarth Lemmel, to set the words to music. Once again, UK born, but she lived in America for many years. And she spent many years, actual fact, at the Moody Bible Institute, where she taught music. She is accredited for having written over 400 hymns. But this hymn, based on Lilius's writing, is the one she's best known for. And like good, successful hymns, it was published in 1918, sung in 1922 at the Keswick Convention, and immediately became a popular favourite, and has since then been included in most evangelical hymnals and translated into many languages. Helen did rephrase some of the words to form the chorus that we have often sung. And I should imagine a number of you can hear the words in your heads now. Turn your eyes upon Jesus. Look full in his wonderful face. And the things of earth will grow strangely dim in the light of his glory and grace. These three ladies are a real example of how focusing on what Jesus wants you to do, not on what you think would be nice to do or delightful to do or would give you earthly praise. Focus on Jesus and you can finish up in unexpected places. You have gifts and skills. He will use them, but he will also extend them. And it's possible that these people are remembered because of what they did. They had been famous artists, good musicians, skilled writers. They may not have been remembered today, but today they are remembered. So Keep your eyes, look towards Jesus, focus on what he wants you to do. And of course, the wonderful thing about this hymn is the promises in this hymn are the promises we will hear as we come around the communion table and as we share the Lord's Supper. We can bring our troubles and our concerns. We can bring our fears and lay them before him. And we can know that there is a greater power and a greater love than the world brings. Our fears and anxieties become, as the hymn says, strangely dim. We can leave the time of communion together with greater joy, purpose, and uplift than when we came. So, after we have sung this hymn, starting with its first verse, O soul, are you weary and troubled? We will be gathering around the table. So during the singing of this hymn, I would ask the stewards if they would come forward, please. So let us stand and sing. Turn your eyes upon Jesus, which of course is the first verse is, O soul, are you weary and troubled? Thank you very much, Frank.